Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Well, according to the World Health Organization, authorities in the Democratic Republic of Congo have reported two more deaths from Ebola and seven new cases. DRC's health ministry says the seven new confirmed cases were registered in Bikoro, and one of the two new deaths occurred in Mbandaka. The outbreak is believed to have killed at least 27 people so far. Health officials are particularly concerned by the disease presence in Mbandaka, a crowded trading hub on the Congo River with road, water and air links to Congo's capital, Kinshasa. So today we will discuss Ebola, look at what the current situation is in the DRC, and also take a general look at the disease going back to when it was first discovered in 1976. And to do that, we have our special guest. He is Dr. Malonga Miatudila. He is a senior public health specialist and an international consultant. Dr. Miatudila is one of the experts who first discovered the Ebola virus in 1976 in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. Dr. Malonga, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So let's look at what is happening now. Can you give us a sense of where things are?
Where things are, actually things are developing. The disease is still developing. I think the cases that we are seeing today are those who were infected at least a week ago. So the problem with Ebola is that you have to wait until you see cases. There is no way you can tell in advance where Ebola is going to hit and when. That is the problem with Ebola. But once you know that it's there, then you can start developing a rapid program for controlling.
Okay. So we will continue this conversation with Dr. Malonga Miatudila. Before we do that, let's take a listen to this Q&A by viewers Ricky Schreier.
It was not too bad when it remained in your remote villages. Now, the fact that it reached one of the big cities of DRC, we have to really put in place the different measures to avoid to spread it. And then it means that we really have to go straight to treat them, isolate them, continue to follow the contact, doing a sensitization of the population, looking at the deaths and try to organize proper funeral. And we also have to look at all the other health structures that could admit a patient to be sure that preventive measures are in place.
And obviously, one of the concerns is always the healthcare workers and their safety.
This is one of the first concerns, is the health of the staff and the security of the staff, because if you don't have staff in good health, you cannot treat the other one. And then one of the first things that we bring, it's also material for the staff to be able to protect themselves, and also providing some training and to explain how to avoid the disease, and to avoid to get the disease, to avoid to spread the disease.
DRC has a history of these outbreaks. This is the ninth in the country in 40 years. But most of those have been contained in remote areas, isolated areas. Is there any information so far about how this specific outbreak managed to reach a port city, a large urban area?
Then it seems that the initial cases are coming from this Bikoro area, and some of the contacts were able to travel to this city, because just you have road, and it's, as you mentioned, it's a big city where people are traveling to. Then I guess for the moment, it's like they are still linked with the initial case that we had in the area of Bikoro, the one that we have actually in Mbandaka, and it's just because they were traveling maybe to look for better care.
What is the role that vaccines and treatments will play in this outbreak in comparison to just last year's in Nkati, and how has this evolved from last year's cases, and also especially, of course, the 2014 outbreak?
This vaccine was used during the West Africa outbreak, and it showed some good results. And I guess this vaccination is now like an additional harm to help to fight this disease. It's not the only thing that we have to do, because all the other things are still supposed to be done, like treat the patient, doing sensitization in the community and so on. But I mean, vaccination is maybe an additional harm to try to avoid the spread.
So that was Axelle Roncet. She is emergency coordinator with Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, speaking to VOA's reporter Ricky Schreier. So Dr. Miatudila, let me come back to you. We heard an update from MSF. You know, they are on the ground. Let me get your take on this.
I think now, again, we have another outbreak. It's not really different from what we have had so far, except that now we are dealing with a problem of a big city. But remember, we have also the same situation when Ebola hit Kikwit, which is also a big city, not very far from Kinshasa. And then from Kikwit to Kinshasa, you also pass through big cities. But even in that situation, we didn't have Kinshasa was not hurt. Why? Because if you want to deal with Ebola, you have to really rely on small communities. Then even if you have a big city, you make sure that you are not dealing with the city as a whole, but we have to partition the city in small communities. Once small communities take care of the problem, you can be quite sure that you are going to control the disease.
So we see that communities have an important role to play, according to what you're saying. Is this what has been one of the perhaps key secrets in terms of containing Ebola in the DRC? Because this is the ninth outbreak, and so far things have been dealt with pretty good. I mean, when we look at what happened in West Africa, for example, we have to admit that DRC have had a successful history in terms of containing outbreaks. So what in that is the role of the community?
So the community really should be put in the driver's seat. This is what I've always been saying. If you are trying to give priority to people coming from outside, they are not going to get very far. Because one of the problem with when dealing with Ebola is communication. And communication and communication, not information, communication can only be done by people who live in the community, people who are trusted by the community. So that's the main weapon against Ebola. If you don't have that, you can bring many sophisticated people from outside. You are not going to get to that the communication, the trust part of the disease, because rumors are going to be spread by people living in the communities, like in West Africa. The people were thinking that the disease was created by in the USA, and the only way to deal with this kind of rumors is to go through people who live in the community, who have the trust of the people. So once you have that, those people then can initiate other measures like containment, because they know who live in the community, how to contain them, how to prevent them from going outside the community to go and spread the disease elsewhere. So again, community really is the main tool that you use if you want to deal with Ebola. And then anybody coming from the external world should be there to support what the community is doing. So that is the secret. That's really the secret. For instance, now in Bandaka, I would like to see people in the, what do you call it, the quartier, the sections of Mbandaka, mm-hmm. be given the power to deal with the disease. And then people from the province or from Kinshasa or from outside should be there to support those leaders, the leaders in the quartier or in the
neighborhood. Leaders. Yeah, in the neighborhood. Okay. So when you talk about the community, it's such an interesting fact because when we deal with Ebola, the role of the community is critical, as you mentioned. It is also critical for the community to understand how Ebola is caught and also can spread. Yes. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So that's then the role of people coming from outside, I'm saying the technicians coming from outside, is to educate the leaders, to give them the information, technical information, and then it's up to the leader to translate that, communicate that information into a language that people in the neighborhood can understand. So mm-hmm. That's the secret.
Okay. There's also the fact that to what extent do the community understand that Ebola is transmitted by this or that or the this other source, which is said to be part of it is, bushmeat, eating bushmeat, perhaps the bat. Can you tell us a little bit about how Ebola first is transmitted, the source of Ebola, and then to what extent it is understood in the community?
Okay, let me go back to the first outbreak. The first outbreak, the index case was a teacher who was coming from the north, from another part of the. He was from the one ethnic group, the Mbunza, but he was coming from the Ndandi group in the north. He's a teacher, a very well-known teacher. And he came down from the north, and then he bought a monkey. So the monkey, the bushmeat, and then he asked his wife to prepare the meat, and then 7 days later, he got sick. So people start saying that the disease was given by a witchcraft from the northern ethnic group. So then the rumor started. So you can imagine then what kind of conflict that can arise from that kind of perception. So we went, we used the nuns who have been living in the area to give the information to the people. Because if it was something that was created by the northern ethnic group, then why should nuns also die, white people die in a conflict that opposed two Zairean ethnic groups? So that information was given to the communities, and then they started understanding that, yes, actually what they've seen is that when somebody dies, and then 7 days later, those who have taken care of the body died. So the information was given to the communities. And then the communities found ways to change some of the traditional practices themselves. They found a solution. Once they are given the correct information, people can change the practices.
Interesting. So then, so is it part of the success or that has enabled communities in the DRC not to live or to experience Ebola outbreak frequently, even given that the disease seemed to be in the region?
Yeah, I would say that's the secret, really. That's the secret, because people understood, they could see. If you show them correctly how the disease is transmitted, you show them real cases. The teacher died, and then you came to the funeral and you touched the body. This is why that person got the disease. Those who just came to the funeral and didn't touch were not sick. So people can make the connection.
Yes.
But you have to allow them to see that.
Yes.
And you have to talk. You have to talk in their language. Sometimes you use their beliefs to enforce the message that you are given. For instance, when they say that now in Bikoro, they said, no, the case was, the first case died because he has stolen the bushmeat from belonging to somebody else. So that was that's the rumor. Now you can use the part of eating the meat, bush meat. You use that, and then you remove the witchcraft part of the message. People can make that change from. You can see the connection between the disease and the meat. And then the part, the magical part will disappear because they're going to see other people who have not stolen, we have not seen they also died.
Okay. Dr. Malonga, we are going to take a short break and come back and continue this very interesting conversation. We will be right back. So stick around. We'll be back with more on Ebola with Dr. Malonga Miatudila. Don't go away.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, let's be upfront.
There's a lot to talk about.
We need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
Upfront is a show where we look at issues that affect Africa's youth,
giving you an opportunity to express yourself as you connect with other youth around the continent.
In this interconnected world, we share a destiny. So let us share our solutions to issues like unemployment,
education reform,
elections,
free speech,
and many others.
Nothing is off the table.
Nothing is off the table.
Absolutely nothing is off the table.
It's Upfront, Wednesdays at 1730 UTC, Saturday at 1900 UTC,
and Sunday at 1930 UTC,
right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing Ebola. Our guest is Dr. Malonga Miatudila. He is a senior public health specialist, international consultant, and one of the experts who first discovered the Ebola virus in 1976 in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So, Dr. Miatudila, let me ask you this. When you first discovered the disease, back then, you didn't even know what it was, and you had to name the disease, and the team named the disease after the river. So, which means that there was not much that was known then. How were you able to handle it then and to survive, really? I think that's the big question, because people know Ebola as being this deadly virus, but how did you survive it when you didn't even know what it was?
No, we didn't know anything about Ebola. Actually, when we came, we went there, we didn't know how it was being spread. But thanks God, when we got there, we found some facts that we could connect. The first fact was that in the Catholic mission, when the outbreak was happening, all the nurses were working in the hospital, all the nurses died. But none of the nurses who were not dealing with patients, none of them died. So we could make a connection. We saw that this is a disease that you contract if you work in a hospital. Second, how come these nurses who were living together didn't die? We concluded that the disease was not that contagious. Otherwise, all the nurses living in the convent would have died. One priest died, and we discovered that he died because he had been in contact with the secretion, the fluid, the blood of one of the body of one of the nurses.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we could make connections. The disease was coming from the hospital, and it was being transmitted through contact with patients. And that really helped us find the first way to find, have some hints on how the disease was being spread.
Okay. So then you look forward. We move fast forward. What is it, like 42 years later? What do you, have you seen any type of changes in terms of the way the disease affects people or spreads in communities among humans, or even from primate to humans?
That was our really sort of question we're asking. Yes, it spread in among human beings through that contact. But where the virus is coming from, that was very, very difficult to find out. We did all the research. We tried all the mammals. None of them, snakes, birds, and none of them had the virus. It's only after many years that we started thinking that maybe bats were the reservoir, the natural reservoir of the virus. So now we have come to the conclusion that the virus lives in the forests, and it lives in harmony with bats. And it's only when people come in contact with bats, either because they eat the bats, or they come in contact with fluids, droppings of the bats in the forest, that's only when people have the opportunity to get a disease. And that has been confirmed often and often. In Kikwit, for instance, we know that the index cases was contaminated through blood from an antelope. The guy was working in the forest, and he brought an antelope in a house, and this is how because he became infected, and he infected the health personnel, his wife, and his parents. So now we know how the disease is spread, goes from the natural reservoir to human community.
So now, looking at this current outbreak, there is the vaccine that is being administered. What is your take on the impact of the vaccine? And I ask this because, again, this is your ninth outbreak. You didn't have a vaccine before, but you were somehow successful in containing and preventing further spread of the outbreak. So now that there is a vaccine, what is the impact? What do you see as the value added of the vaccine? Of course, people will say prevention, but to what extent?
So vaccine, I think, is going to be another tool. If the vaccine doesn't have side effects, okay, it's going to be an additional tool for people who are trying to contain the disease. But before the vaccine, we knew that these diseases is what we call it. It's a disease that allows the human to make antibodies. Because even in 1976, we used not the vaccine, but the serum of people who have recovered from the Ebola to treat two cases. One in London and in Liverpool, the School of Public Health in Liverpool, we succeeded in treating and curing person was working in the lab, and then in the Yambuku, we treated one of our colleagues who came down with the disease. So we had, in those days, we had the serum of people who have recovered the disease. And now we have a vaccine. So we know that Ebola is a disease that can be controlled with antibodies, that we know. Mm-hmm. So it's going to help us. It's going to have an additional arm in our arsenal against against Ebola. But again, the first tool should be education, communication, and containment.
Okay. And what segment of the population is receiving the vaccine, or is it something that eventually most people will receive?
No, I don't think it's useful to vaccinate the whole population. I think given the price and the stage, we are still are at the early stage of using the vaccine, I will recommend that this vaccine be used only for people who have been in contact with sick patients or people in very high risk of getting the disease because they are in contact with patients like the health personnel. Mm-hmm. But so, I'm not going to recommend that the whole population be vaccinated against Ebola, no.
Yeah, because, one of the things also that some people are concerned with is the fact that the vaccine has not been licensed yet. So people need to actually give the written consent before getting the vaccine. However, the vaccine proved to be effective in 2014 during the outbreak in West Africa when it underwent trials. So that's something that I wanted to make sure we mention. I believe Merck, who is the pharmaceutical company to put out the vaccine, I believe they are seeking, they are anticipating 2019 as the year to get the approval. I don't know if they are still going to follow the schedule or if they're going to seek approval much sooner now that it's being released. However, if you have some additional information on that, please share with us. Otherwise, the other question that I wanted to ask you is, what are the lessons that we learned or we should have learned from the 2014-2016 outbreak in West Africa, given the extent of the outbreak? And one of the questions that I asked myself personally is if DRC has been able to successfully deal with eighth outbreak. Back then it was eighth. I think seven, then it went to eight, now it's the ninth. And I was asking myself, why is West Africa going through this very dramatic turn of event? What were the lessons learned from 2014 in West Africa, would you say?
Unfortunately, we have learned a very bad lesson. One is, I don't know how to say that diplomatically, but it's arrogance. We are paid for arrogance, for not listening to people who have dealt with the disease. That's arrogance, unfortunately. And then the second mistake we made in West Africa was denial. In West Africa, they were convinced that Ebola is not our disease, is the disease of the others, people from Central Africa. We are West Africa. We are not Central Africa, so we cannot have Ebola. So denial was the mistake. And then it took them 3 months before recognizing that we have the problem. That's what the third mistake. And then the fourth mistake was, instead of applying the recipe that had been put in place in some other countries, they wanted to invent the wheel.
Okay.
So these are the mistakes that were made. And then we paid a very, very big tribute to that. And we tried to change the course of the events, but were not successful.
Well, we have to leave it there. Hopefully we learned and we will do better in future outbreaks. And thank you, Dr. Malonga. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to address my people.
Absolutely. That was Dr. Malonga Myatudila, our guest today. We thank him. We thank all of you for joining us. I'm your host, Lino Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
stay tuned for Africa.